Money Radio, thanks so much for joining us today and joining us now. Pleasure to welcome Ilana Gershon. She's an associate professor of anthropology at Indiana University and the author of a new book, Down and Out in the New Economy, How People Find or Don't Find Work Today, by Ilana Gershon, Down and Out in the New Economy. Ilana, thank you so much for joining us.
It's a real pleasure.
It's not really anthropology, is it?
I think it is.
Is it?
I have a lot of people who ask me why this isn't sociology. But I think the kinds of questions I'm asking is, what is the underlying cultural logic shaping how people look for work and how people evaluate hiring candidates? And because of that, and because every way I know how to think about these questions is shaped by my training in anthropology, I think it's anthropology. I'm not sure I've ever convinced anybody with that answer.
Well, perhaps current anthropology.
Yes, very much current anthropology.
Because really this is changing how people are finding work and the type of work we're doing and our relationship between employee and employer is really reshaping society as a whole. And we're going through a big transformation right now.
I think you're absolutely right about that.
What is that transformation? How would you describe it?
Well, so because I'm an anthropologist, I was thinking about it in terms of the cultural logic. And cultural logic sounds really vague, and I was thinking about it in terms of the metaphors that we use to understand what it means to be a working person. And so what my research shows is that the metaphor that people used to think that they were living with is that they imagined that they owned themselves as though they were property, and when they were being hired, they were renting themselves to an employer, metaphorically speaking, for a particular period of time. And then they get themselves back. So they have a clear boundary between work life because the self that they have rented has returned, and now it's their personal self again. And so no one talked about a work-life balance until this metaphor changed. And when this metaphor changed, it changed so that people now think of themselves as though they are a business. They still understand that they own themselves. That part of it hasn't changed, but what they are owning has really changed. And so they think now that they are a bundle of skills and assets and relationships and qualities and experiences that have to be managed as though you manage a business. And then when you enter into an employment contract, you're entering into a business-to-business alliance instead of a renting relationship. And what my book is about is how that's completely changed the ways in which people put together resumes, answer job questions, and also choose jobs, that they now have very different strategies for understanding what counts as a good job, and people who are hiring have different ways of evaluating whether someone is going to be a good alliance for them, for their business.
So it really, we have to start imagining each individual as a business. That changes how we imagine the relationship between employer, employee, the hiring process, the actual work process as well.
I think so. I don't think we have to do this. And part of what I'm hoping with my book is pointing out that we're beginning to do this and that it didn't make a lot of people I interviewed terribly happy to be doing this.
Well, yeah, there are probably some setbacks along the way, some problems that can come up. Let's start with the hiring process, because okay, this is probably something that confuses a lot of people. Once upon a time, you could pick up a newspaper, there was an ad in the classifieds, there was a job. You'd see a sign on a business, help wanted. You'd talk to somebody and they would say, yeah, so-and-so needs some help over here. That's not how it's done anymore. How is it done now?
Well, now a lot of what happens is that people are putting their resume online through something like monster.com or by having a LinkedIn profile, and then they're looking for jobs online. But because they've put themselves online, they end up having recruiters contact them. And the recruiters will be using LinkedIn as a database to try to find who is a likely candidate. And in fact, can I just tell you something very funny? Today, for the first time, I had a recruiter contact me, which was really interesting, to kind of suddenly be the subject of this thing that I have been studying. And once you do that, you then go through what ends up being a pretty familiar process. You have a phone interview and often a video interview, and then you get called on to the job site to go through in-person interviews and see whether you've made the cut and gotten the job that way.
What would someone have to put down in an online resume to actually get a follow-up call? Because I've heard of people who have tried this process and put out hundreds of online applications and nothing happened.
Yeah, so a lot of the people who are career counselors who I was talking to felt that the online resume was not going to be the most effective because there are just too many of them. And part of the problem is that you're relying on how people use particular keywords to search and what applications and what resumes a search engine is going to cough up first. And you can't always guess what keywords people are going to use to try to find a particular job. And this is something that many of the people I was interviewing were very frustrated by, which was that if a human being who understood what the job actually was searching for them, they would be able to read the resume and say, oh, this really works. This person would be really appropriate. But because so many of the people who are searching for jobs don't necessarily have the same intimate understanding of what the job is like or that they are being searched for using search engines that don't more of the problem is not actually with the recruiters, but with the technology, that the technology is sorting in ways that aren't as sophisticated as they could be, as a human is in interpreting this, then people get overlooked, even though they're perfectly well qualified. And so people were very frustrated by this, that so much of it is guessing which keywords people are going to be searching for. So a lot of what people have done, quite sensibly, is turn to networking as a way to get around this, that if you have human contact, people can then realize that actually you really are appropriate for the job.
So does that mean I have to have Facebook, LinkedIn, whatever it may be, in order to get a job?
You have to have friends.
Okay. And
you have to be nice to your coworkers. I think that actually matters more than having LinkedIn or having Facebook, is having good social relationships that will be a strong enough community to help you.
Let's talk about personal brand. First off, what is it?
Personal branding was something that I found really interesting because it is an extension of this metaphor that if you imagine yourself to be a business, then businesses need brands, and so probably individuals need brands too if they're going to be like a business. But the question is, what exactly is that? That seems so vague. And so what people would say is that you need to try to find three or four words that represent your authentic self. And then you figure out how to make sure that all your online interaction and your offline interaction ends up coinciding with these three or four terms that are speaking to your authentic self. And that this is what it means to do the work of personal branding. And in my book, I talk about a lot of skepticism about this.
Yeah, and I can think of a few things. I mean, do I brand myself as Coca-Cola or Google or, Steven Spielberg? What's it going to be?
Well, I think you're actually supposed to brand yourself as hardworking or meticulous or imaginative or detail-oriented. I don't think you get to brand yourself as Coca-Cola or Google.
Well,
those
the copyright problems, yeah. But there are different ways that you can brand yourself, and
yes.
Aren't you just limiting yourself by branding?
Yes, absolutely. I one of the oddest things I found about this is that what it's urging you to do is be a coherent self, be the same person in every context. But I don't know about your listeners, but honestly, in my life, the people who are the same in every context are actually the most unpleasant people I have to deal with. They don't adapt to whatever the demands are. And kind of making people seem like they are only one set of qualities instead of really the complex human being that I tend to experience everyone as being is very limiting.
Yeah, it seems like there's not much of a line between consistency and dogmatic.
No.
And one may be good, the other not. But then let's take it another step. If we're going to go beyond personal branding, what about presenting ourselves as a business? Do I need a business model?
I haven't found anybody who's been that rigid about the metaphor, but they have talked about needing to be able to understand how they're going to orient themselves toward the future in a much more business-oriented way, in which they're not depending on being in one company or being in a company for very long, for having the career. And they also talk a lot about having to imagine themselves as a compilation of business solutions for a business's problems, that they need to be able to represent that they manage these solutions. So it's not necessarily having a business model, it's being able to market yourself like a business.
And you talk about passion for work.
Yes.
Passion, not loyalty. This is the new driving emotional force. Well, that's interesting, but that goes well beyond the work time, the personal time. That's an all-consuming thing, passion is.
That's what I'm really worried about, which is that having passion for your work means not paying attention to the other parts of your life. And the other thing that I find interesting, and that's what people find from the hiring side, that's what people find appealing about it, is that you're hiring someone who is going to work the really long hours that many jobs now demand and be willing to put up with any set of inconveniences just because they love their work so much. But what I find also really interesting about the passion is that it's passion for particular tasks. It's not actually the joy of working with your coworkers. It's not the deep happiness of working with a particular company. It's not supposed to be about strong feelings for the people in the workplace. Instead, it's supposed to be a passion for the tasks of the job, and that means that it's something that you could do anywhere in many cases. Like, there are a few companies where you can only do those particular tasks in those companies, but that's pretty rare. And so it's a way to make people more mobile through companies as well, to think about it in terms of passion. So it's not only that they're working long hours when they are at that company, but that they're also much more willing to switch.
This is really changing the economic landscape, how jobs are found, how jobs are performed, what it means to your personal life and your business life. I mean, this whole idea of work-life balance, which we hear so much of now, is a phrase that we didn't hear really 10 years ago. There are some profound consequences to what you're writing about in this new book, Down and Out in the New Economy, How People Find or Don't Find Work Today. The author, Ilana Gershon, Down and Out in the New Economy. And we will continue this conversation in just a moment. Thanks so much for joining us today on Money Radio. We're talking with Ilana Gershon, very interesting new book, Down and Out in the New Economy, How People Find or Don't Find Work Today, Down and Out in the New Economy. You really are talking about a major transformation in the economy. If we are looking at people as business, self as business, if you take that metaphor, and I think we are seeing the transformation take place. We're seeing more and more independent contractors, people who come in, provide a solution to a business, work a project, if you will, and then they move on somewhere else. This is actually a growing phenomenon among the workplace. It may change how we count the workplace, how we measure and gauge the workplace, which then means we have to change how we measure and gauge economic performance and our understanding of the economy as a whole.
I think you're absolutely right about that.
What are the obligations in this new landscape between employer and employee?
Well, so one of the things that I found fascinating about what happens with this new system is many of the obligations that people used to provide no longer seem to be as relevant, right? So it's not that businesses are as committed to providing benefits, especially if they can do this with independent contractors. But one of the things that I found interesting was that new managers would talk about how they would deal with new employees in ways that I could not imagine having happened 20 years or 30 years earlier, which is when you get a new employee, people would tell me, as kind of an example of how they were behaving extremely well, that they would take them to lunch and they would start talking to them about what the kind of contractual obligations were going to be between an employee and a manager, and they would say, look, you're not working for me, I'm working for you, which when they said that to me, I always nodded and thought, uh-huh, yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And then they would continue and say to the employee, and tell me that they would say to the employee, and because of that, I know that you're not going to be working for this company for very long, so it is my obligation to make sure that you get as many skills that you're going to need in order to be able to find another job. And I found this fascinating that these managers were expecting people to leave them and were telling them that the obligation that they had was to help them get another job, that was part of the contract, as in the first week. So now quitting is really on everybody's mind, that this has become the kind of new fixation of how the job market works, is that people are constantly anticipating quitting their jobs and trying to get another one. And people would tell me about choosing jobs with the intention of, could that lead to a better job once they quit it, right? So if they had a choice between jobs, they were always trying to figure out which of the job choices they had would lead to the next job, and the job and the next job being the one that they preferred the most.
This really is a transformation in the economy. It changes how we consider the employee-employer relationship. When we look at the idea of training for a job, when we look at the idea of the hiring process, when we look at commitment and loyalty of worker and employer, when we look at all these different elements that are such important elements to how we function in the workplace, this really deals with a lot of these important ideas, and you did some great research on this. It shows in the writing, and the writing is a lot of fun, and you bring up one of the nicest things I hope I can say is that you bring up a lot of really intriguing questions. In the book, Down and Out in the New Economy by Ilana Gershon, Down and Out in the New Economy. Ilana, thank you so much for joining us today.
This was such a pleasure. Thank you.